You're listening to the Make It British podcast. I'm Kate Hills, and I'm on a one-woman mission to save UK manufacturing. In 2008, I gave up my 20-year career as a fashion buyer because I was disillusioned with how much was being sourced overseas, and I set out to uncover some of the amazing businesses that are still making in the UK. Since founding Make It British, I've discovered that there is not only still tons of manufacturing taking place in Britain, but that it's a thriving industry. I invite you to join me each week when I'll be chatting to inspiring British-made brands and UK manufacturers and offering advice to product-based businesses that make in the UK. So with no further ado, let's get on with the show. Hello and welcome to episode number 292 of the Make It British podcast. So everyone that listens to this podcast or who knows me knows that I love to get out on a factory visit whenever I possibly can. And recently I headed up to the Cotswolds to visit Courtney & Co, the button makers. So before we get on to my chat with Andrew and David Courtney, let me tell you a little bit of a story. So back in 2012, not long after I set up Make It British, I was contacted by someone who was trying to save the UK's last remaining horn button maker. They were called Grove & Sons. And this chap was looking for investors to buy up the machinery and the pattern books from the Grove & Sons business so that the art of natural button making in the UK was not lost. So it turns out that the investor that this guy eventually found was someone called David Courtney, who saw an ad to buy the machinery and the patterns and decided that he couldn't let this button making heritage go and that he was going to save it. Fast forward to over a decade later, and David Courtney now has the most amazing button making factory in the Cotswolds with state-of-the-art machinery producing buttons from three different types of materials, all natural. He's also enlisted his lovely wife, Andrea, to head up the factory because David still has a day job. And Courtney & Co now supply the most beautiful buttons to brands and designers who want to use authentic UK-made buttons on their clothing. And they're still made using the original patterns that David actually saved from Grove & Sons. So this interview was recorded on site in their factory, and Andrea and David are going to recount the tale of how Courtney & Co buttons got to where they are today. Here you go. David, do you want to go back to the beginning? How did it all come about?
Well, I suppose it came about in 2013. We moved back from Germany to the Cotswolds in October 2012, much to Andrea's chagrin, because she lived in paradise and I ripped her from it. And I was a man on a mission because I've always been mad about British manufacturing. So my uncle was a watchmaker. There are actually Courtney of Long Melford watches out there. My grandfather was a furniture maker, worked at Maples, Waring and Gillow in London and so on. And I've always lamented the loss of British manufacturing.
Me too.
And it got to a point where I said, I've got to stop complaining about it and start doing something about it. And it was just an absolute fluke. I opened up a copy of Country Life magazine, and on the bottom of one of the pages, it said, "Save Britain's horn button make industry."
I remember that. It's not long after I set up Make It British.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, much to Andrea's chagrin, because she thought I was completely mad, I got hold of the chap who was leading the charge. Discovered that actually the last machines that were left over from the James Grove factory he had bought but couldn't pay for, and that they were actually in containers to go to Vietnam, who were the underbidders. And so when I contacted him, he said, "You need to speak to the auctioneer." And I phoned the auctioneer and he said, "You've got 2 days. If you don't buy the machines in 2 days, they're going to Vietnam." And that was it. So the following day, I went to Birmingham. I had no idea what I was doing. I had no idea what the machines were, whether they worked, what they did, what they were worth. Nothing, absolutely nothing. And I cut a check for £100,000, basically on the spot, because it was pull the trigger. There was no kind of time to think about it, they would have been gone. But in the midst of that, we also bought, as you can see behind, a lot of the heritage of James Grove as well. So 8,000 historic dyes. We've got pattern books. We've got, you know, other books and records, everything that that went along with James Grove. So that was 2013. And the original idea was that we were just going to lease the machines out to this chap who had rented a vast factory in Birmingham and tried to employ some of the former James Grove staff. But he was less than straightforward.
I still remember his name because he was always on the phone to me. Can you find me anyone that can help me buy these buttons?
Yeah, yeah.
Valentine.
Yes, exactly. And that kind of went downhill very quickly. So in December 2015, we got the nod that actually the bailiffs were coming and we were clearing out the factory. We were on our way to Germany for Christmas and we had people clearing out the machines out of the factory in Birmingham on Christmas Eve. And we were in Dover waiting to get on the ferry and I got a call saying we're all clear. It's all okay. Otherwise, the bailiffs would have come in, and it's quite possible that they would have just confiscated the machine because they would not have been able to untangle what belonged to whom. So they went then into a storage in West Brom for, I don't know, a year, year and a half, £1,000 a month. It was a lot of kit. And then eventually we found somebody who had been making buttons but had no experience in natural materials. And so we struck a deal initially, but with the intention that we were going to take over. It was going to be, you know, a skill transfer so that as over time we would learn what we're doing and then we would do more and more, particularly in horn. But as it turned out, we just do everything in-house now. So the real kind of axial moment came when in 2021, when Steve started learning how to use the machines. And 2022, we made our first saleable buttons. And 2023, we were almost fully self-sufficient. And so now we rectify the blanks, we turn the buttons, we polish, we dye, we etch, we do everything entirely in-house.
So it took 10 years then from when you first had the idea, I'm going to save British manufacturing, I'm going to buy a button.
Yeah, I know.
Factory.
Crazy, isn't it? Absolutely crazy. And a lot of money. And we have lost a lot of money because there is no government support. That, you know, we've been in contact with associations. We went to the Horners Association. We went to so many different people who ostensibly are promoting themselves as a place to go for financing. But they go, okay, so you're a button maker. How many button makers are there? Just us. Oh, okay. So how many jobs are you going to create if we give you money? One. Well, thank you very much indeed. And that was it. So the whole thing has been financed, subsidized, and losses suffered through our own kind of
your
industry.
Your day job.
Yeah.
Remind me what your day job is.
Well, it's
not manufacturing. Is
no,
it?
It's consulting in financial markets. My background
totally
is city.
Different.
Yeah. But thankfully, it God is on our side, and He looks after us, and He pays the bills and enough to keep this going. And then, of course, with Andrea's energy and hard work and application, you know, she's really turn this into what is now a viable business.
So really, it's a woman-run factory here then?
Completely.
Yeah.
Of course it is.
With your backing well, up, definitely.
Well, less and less so.
I'm your most of the time.
Andrea's really taken over as the boss. She did that really 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 2021, because this rather small and not very well-performing business of mine, because I was doing it as much as I was doing. I have another job on the consulting business, which keeps all this stuff going. But she's really a very Teutonic, taken it over and has put a lot of form and structure into it and works very, very hard. And she's very personal. She gets on with everybody, but has this very, very keen eye to service. And so in a world where we talk of a service economy, but there's very little service delivered. You know, she's doing great.
It's because she's a woman, and probably because she's super efficient because she's German. Not yeah, that I'm generalizing.
No. On the contrary, and I think actually because
Germans know how to run factories.
They do, and it kind of runs in their blood. But last week we were at the Textile Forum in London, and Women in Tailoring came to visit us on our stand, and they've invited Andrea now to be a part of that. And I think not only is it unusual to kind of see button makers or in factories, but a woman running a button making factory is actually even bigger news than anything else. And she's just done, you know, an absolutely incredible job.
She's but turned me around. So
the extraordinary thing was, you know, because we were originally kind of outsourcing a lot of the production because we really didn't know how to make the buttons.
Yeah,
we had the machines, but we really didn't have the know-how. In fact, we didn't even know the questions to ask, let alone the answers to the questions we needed to pose. And so we started actually by in-house dyeing, and Andrea, who's got no experience whatsoever of dyeing or anything, has an eye for it. And she just kind of started dyeing. Corozo, which is one of the most difficult materials because it is porous and so on. And she was just absolutely fantastic at it. Lisa used to work next door at a factory making kale crisps. They then closed down, and we'd always been talking to her, and she said, you know, what are you doing? And we said, well, come on over and see what if you like it. And believe it or not, she came to work for us and started helping her. Andrea showed her how to dye, and she's another of these people who just got the eye. So Graham Basserfield, who was the former head dyer at Grove, said that actually what you can do is if you actually ladle the dye and then let it run through, you can see all the colours, all the pigments and all of the combinations of in concentration. And he can see colours within colours. Not many people can see that. Andrea can see it and Lisa can see it. And so suddenly, out of nowhere, we had not one but two amazing dyers. The next kind of part of the story is kind of even more bizarre because Steve, who's our head button maker, is the brother of the chap who ran the riding stable where we kept our pony. And we never knew Steve, had no contact with him whatsoever. And we had our pony at in Evenload. And one day, Stuart, Steve's brother, said, my brother's looking for a job. Do you think you could have a word with him? He said, well, send him over. And it happens that he used to work in a unit over here years ago. That is how close it was, literally diagonally opposite. And he came in and we took him on a 3-month kind of contract. Hadn't got the machines even running at that point in time, but he actually started thinking, this is quite good. And then eventually it went on that we got the machines. And in September 21, we actually got somebody over from Italy to show us how to use the turning machines downstairs.
Yeah, we received the machines March 2020, just when lockdown started. And then it took 1.5 years of them
to get somebody over. It was a nightmare. But then Steve has just taken to it like you can't imagine. And Bonetti, who are the machine providers, they came over to teach him, but also to you know, they service the machines. And they said, actually, he's one of the best button makers in the world. And he's been doing it two years. And it's his forever job now. He absolutely loves it. In fact, these buttons were being polished overnight. And apparently his wife was saying that he was so concerned about them. He was up all night wondering how they're going to be and came in this morning, even though it's his day off, just to check up on them to make sure they were okay.
Katie, but you had to shoot off. But yeah, he is totally passionate about it. Amazing.
It is incredible. And then Niffin, we were kind of talking because, you know, the most valuable sustainable resource is human capital. And as much as you can talk about sustainable materials, if you don't have the people who have the skills, the materials are inert. They don't do anything. And so Andrea kind of reached out on a LinkedIn kind of thing. And we had quite a few very interesting people get in contact with us. And then Nithin was there. Hello, I've just come over from India. I live in Cheltenham and can I come over and see you? And he came in and we offered him a job, I think the same day, if not the next day.
I found him within two weeks, just posting on LinkedIn.
Wow. Yeah.
And so we've been very lucky. We hope he's going to like it and stay with us.
And he's an engineering graduate from just south of Goa, so the Portuguese kind of area of it.
Yeah.
And he's worked with machines, etc. Never made buttons in his life. He's just another one of those who, I don't know, these buttons must be infectious. Because actually, the passion that arises from kind of the making of them is extraordinary. And it really is kind of the beauty and the beast when you see that the actual the blanks that we receive and then the buttons that are made from them, it's an extraordinary transformation, and everybody just buys into this.
We're all incredible. Like a big family. I sit up here on the first floor in the office and I hear them giggle downstairs all the time. So yeah, they all get on really well.
So do you want to tell your side of the story, Andrea?
Well, I just fell into this, to be honest, because David, he did this all by himself at the beginning, and I tried to help him sorting buttons and sending out buttons wherever we could. And I said, we've got to start dyeing these buttons by ourselves. So once I learned how to dye buttons, I was getting involved more and more because I started really loving and developing a passion for it. And David got more and more busy with his own day job. So one day he said, Andrea, I can't deal with both anymore. Would you like to step up and take this over? And I said, yeah, why not? And that was 4 or 5 years ago.
I thought it was 21, actually.
Well, anyway, a few years ago.
You were definitely involved. I can't remember exactly, but, you know.
But, I absolutely love it. I love getting up in the morning, coming here, working with the team, although I'm most of the time up here in the office dealing with customer inquiries, sending out buttons, doing all the, you know, the orders and negotiations. And yeah, I absolutely love it. I really do.
So on the kind of like the nuts and bolts of how it works, like for anyone that's listening to the podcast, what's the minimum order that they can place on a button?
So the minimum order we say is usually 300 buttons, which you can mix and match, but we do send out smaller button orders, for example, for samples, and then we charge a £10 sample fee plus the value of the button. We also do bespoke dye runs, so you can send us a fabric swatch and we should be able to nearly match every color in Corozo and in casein. And we charge £40 for a bespoke dye run. And turnaround times are usually up to 5 working days from receipt of swatch.
That's good.
Yeah, because we've got thousands of buttons, as you can see behind you. So our machines have to turn thousands of buttons because the setup takes so long, takes Steve nearly an entire day to set up a line size per machine. The machines then turn between 1,200 and nearly 2,000 buttons an hour, depending on the material. So we've got to have decent runs. And we usually have between 10 and 15,000 buttons in stock in every line size, in natural, undyed, so from which we can just take literally from stock and provide orders very quickly.
And so you've got three different materials. Do you want to just describe the three different materials and what are the benefits of each one are, like why would you choose one over the other?
Well, so we've got three materials, which is Corozo, casein and real horn. Corozo, that is a seed that grows in the Ecuadorian rainforests and actually preserves the indigenous rainforests because the nut falls to the ground and the communities collect it and they can earn money from selling the blanks to Europe. And Corozo buttons have been used for, I think it was nearly 200 years.
1865.
Found by a German. So the Germans started with it, but I find this is probably my preferred choice because it really is totally biodegradable.
I think the interesting thing is actually that the story goes that actually the nuts were used as ballast on ships that were coming back from South America. And upon their arrival in the Hanseatic ports, they didn't know what to do with them. So they would just throw them away until somebody actually looked at them and thought, we can make something out of that. Mm-hmm. So they're known as Steinnuss in German, which is stone nut, because they're very, very hard. But I think the other thing about Corozo is that not only is it completely biodegradable, but it's a gift from God that the actual husks fall to the ground when they're ripe. mankind doesn't intervene at all. There's literally, they are lying on the ground and you just have to go and forage for them. And that makes them extremely special.
Mm. Yeah, no, really is a gift of nature, the Corozo button. And then we have our casein buttons where we receive the planks from Italy. So it's, I think David is much better in explaining the process, but this is a man-made product. It's quite similar to cheese making, but the sheets, the casein sheets, they cure 1 millimeter per week. So it takes about 8 weeks for a casein sheet to be cured thick enough for a blank to be stamped out so that we can turn a button out of it. The casein manufacturer in Italy can also add certain color pigments, which then, which we receive to make mock horn casein buttons. So they look like horn buttons, but they're actually not. So it's a totally biodegradable product as well, but it's more man-made. And but lovely as well, because it does resemble a little bit mother of pearl. It's shiny and very vibrant and dyes in the most amazing colors.
And interesting, actually, the process apparently perfected by a Russian immigrant in 1909 in nearby Stroud, which is about 25 miles away from here, as the crow flies. And it was an absolute staple of the button making industry until polyester came along. And a lot of the properties of casein were actually then replicated by polyester, but done at a much, much cheaper cost. So Grove last produced a casein button apparently in 1973. We started production in 2018, meaning that was the first time in 45 years that milk casein buttons were made in this country again.
Love that statistic. Brilliant.
Yeah. And then real horn.
Absolutely beautiful, because they look extremely vibrant and very shiny. So something that a Corozo button might not be able to do. It's a lot more matte looking, but a lot more natural feel as well, a Corozo button. But casein are, I think they should be, you know, recommended a lot more, but they're not quite as popular yet. Maybe we can change that soon. And then, of course, we've got the horn buttons, which is a byproduct of the meat industry. So the horn planks that we receive from India come from the water buffalo, long, big horns. And we use the tip of the horn, which is the only part that can be used as a blank. So for button making.
And there is one there for David.
And of course, horn buttons are absolutely exquisite, depending on which colors you buy. But they're our most expensive material, because they have an additional process, like we showed you downstairs, Kate, with the horn rectifying. But they are absolutely exquisite. And you can either have them in a matte finish or in a polished finish. And so, but totally different to Corozo or casein.
So when it comes to kind of the pricing scale, does it start with casein, then Corozo, then horn? Is that the
Not quite right.
I got it wrong.
Yeah, you're nearly there. No, Corozo is our cheapest range.
Oh, okay.
It's the cheapest button. And then there's the casein button in the middle, and the horn buttons are the most expensive range. But we try and be, you know, quite competitive with the rest of Europe. But yeah, so a Corozo button starts at 16 pence for the smallest button and goes up to 30 pence for the most expensive one.
The
largest line size. And casein start at 17.5 pence and a horn button at 25 pence.
Brilliant. I mean, I know there's so many British brands that I know that use your button. They're always kind of saying, and we use the UK's only button maker.
Well, yeah, I think the fashion world is, I think, divided into three different areas. One is, which is the fast fashion, which is just literally pile them high and sell them cheap. There's no interest in provenance or whatever. It's just a proposition of this is what you get and it's going to be that amount of money. Then you've got the big brands, which are highly commercially loaded, very, very conspicuous, you just want to wear a brand name and everybody goes for it. Our target market is more in the middle, which is made out of value propositions. And you talk about the provenance, you talk about the work, you talk about the history, you talk about the context, and they weave our story into the stories that they are telling. So they're not just buying a button, they're actually buying a whole kind of story, which appeals in turn to their buyers. And that's why it's a rather kind of convenient relationship we have with our a lot of our customers.
Mm, brilliant. Can you can't do it with someone's brand name etched on the button, can you?
We have got a bed laser etcher that can etch a button, but that is one of the issues that we've got currently. We cannot do particularly high runs with it because it's a very slow process. It takes us about 1 minute per button. So runs ideally to 1,000 units is ideal for us. But that's the issue where we are now coming to. An automated laser etcher is nearly £70,000. And it is on our list because we know that we should have one downstairs. It's just a lot of money. And again, because we've not managed so far to get any grants or support from the government, can we really, or do we really want to invest this? Because we still have got teenagers who are going through, you know, education stages and actually do need quite a bit of money pumped in.
Mum and dad. Mum and spending money on buttons.
Yeah, that's right. So it is a big deal, and we cannot get a loan for it. It is literally out of our private funds. And the trouble is that nobody is prepared to pay for the etching. So that machine is just considered part of your, you know, range. Mm. You just have to have it, but it's never going to pay through the orders you're going to get.
It's difficult to amortize like that.
Yeah.
It's sort of seen as a prerequisite rather than an add-on.
But a machine like that could possibly etch up to 6,000 buttons an hour automatically.
How many buttons did you say you make here a week?
I don't know how many a week,
but we've sold 700,000 last year.
Yeah.
Our capacity, I would say, is comfortably 2 million, and that's what we need to aim.
Yeah.
Brilliant, right. Target 2 million then. So everyone listening to this.
Yes, it's
our target. Place order for their buttons.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely, yeah. We're ahead of where we were last year. We're well ahead, and things seem to be happening. We've invested a lot in actually upstairs and downstairs. So the production side the appointment of Nithin has helped us to increase our productive capacity, but we're also doing a lot more marketing now. We've taken on a sales agent as well. So we have to balance the operation as well. You can't produce too many and not sell them. And you can't sell too many without making them. So it is such a delicate balance all the time. But yes, we think we're kind of keeping it under wraps, and we've got to grow at a sustainable pace.
Do you hold any in stock, like ready? If someone wants like a standard kind of brown or black horn or something, do you hold them in stock?
Yes. Yeah. So we have a sample book that people could either buy or have a look at where they can see our standard colours. So we have five standard colours in Corozo. They are black, brown, grey, navy and natural. And we have around 700 to 1,000 of those in stock in each colour, in each line size in Corozo.
And each pattern.
So you could just write me an email and say, I need 300 black ones in Cornbury 24 line. And the chances are extremely high that I'll have them and I can send them out directly. Horn buttons, we've got a standard range in two patterns, ranging from 24 line to 40 line. And we have thousands of them in stock, ready in matte. Not in polish, but in matte. So I can send out our standard horn button very quickly too.
And I think the importance of that is having access to a manufacturer who is able to respond pretty quickly and maintain both finished stock and part finished stock is that we're expediting the whole supply chain. And so we have a number of people, and it feeds into the whole kind of quantifiable sales process. So we have customers who, rather than produce, say, 1,000 garments, they can actually make 500 garments, knowing that they can make them, upsell them, and then return to us, and we can resupply them, restock them within 24 hours. So we're actually reducing wastage in the system. We're expediting the time of production, reducing the amount of capital they have to keep, the risk to them of not being able to sell. And that's all because we're sitting on an awful lot of buttons that we can turn around very, very quickly.
Brilliant. I'm so glad I got to actually come and visit you. It's amazing.
So are we.
Do you have customers come and visit? Can people come and visit if they want to see
their
buttons being made?
Yes, very much so. And you're our third customer coming over this week. And we absolutely love having people over, because when we show them every process, they actually realize how much work there is that goes into a button. And then it becomes a lot more clear to them that the cost they're paying, the little bit of up price they're paying for a British manufactured button, is actually very much justified.
It's a lot of handwork in it, isn't it, with the dyeing and everything?
Yeah, it is. There's a lot of handwork. Every process takes time, and we even sort every button towards the end by hand. Check them, count them before they go out.
Actually, I think one of the strange things is that customers who come in, who may be saying, buttons are so expensive, when they leave us, they actually ask us how it is that we can sell them so cheaply, given how much work that goes into it. And I think you've got to kind of put that in context, is that button making is actually precision engineering. So when we rectify the blanks, they're rectified to within 1/100th of a millimetre. It is so precise, it is ridiculous, because you will notice, and you develop an eye where you will see the difference of a tenth of a millimetre. You can literally see the difference. And so this isn't just a casual kind of round disc. These are properly made.
Brilliant. That's fantastic. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you for
absolutely delightful having you here.
It was definitely.